and we're remembering how to do a podcast.
Nope.
Yeah, no, we totally remember. Oh, I forgot to tell you. So I had to drive like 5 hours today to do a terrible dad task.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'll talk about it in a second, but today I had to go do a dead dad task, and, I had to drive my mom's car because I had a flat, because everything's going great for me. And she, as I like pulled out of my driveway and made a turn, like 5 or 6 black jelly beans fell down from like the steering wheel onto my feet.
What?
And like, I could hear them rolling around like inside, like behind the steering wheel. And probably like,
how do you know like those were jelly beans? Them
fell out while I was driving.
Liz, there's no way those were jelly beans.
No,
those were like egg sacs of some horrible.
I thought they were like very specific stones. Was what I thought, and I couldn't. I'm like, did she put black jelly beans in the engine? Like, how did they get there? Because they were definitely falling out from like the steering wheel column.
Because Karen does like black jelly beans
too much.
I do know this about her. That sick freak.
And upon later inspection, we found out that it was all the mice that live in her car, because they all had little mousy bites out of them. So they'd gone into her purse, which had a bag of black jelly beans, taken all the car mice, and taken out all the black jelly beans, and then put them inside, like, behind the wheel. And then they all came out onto my
feet. Not those naughty little car mice. Oh, the world's too much.
So,
how are we supposed to go on like this?
So let's... if we're doing bad news, I'll just get it all out. Okay, so, like, we've generally had a problem updating during the pandemic, but I wanted to
yeah, we were already, like, I would say neither of us were having, like,
right.
a year. Like, we were not on our game already,
right.
but then...
Yeah, I'm having
really,
some
really
troubles.
Hard, bad year.
But I wanted to say that I'm not just, like, not having a good time. I'm having, like, a very bad time.
The worst
yeah.
time.
So, like, I kind of debate.
So be
yeah.
nice to Liz. Or
yeah.
I'll kill you. Everyone, just send really good vibes.
Or could you talk to whatever witch cursed me? Because I'm so tired.
Yeah, please help uncurse Liz. And if you add curses,
So, like, I kind of debated talking about this because I don't know if it's too much and I don't think that's really why you come here, but I also don't know how, like, not to talk about it. And like, it's strange to try to parse
yeah.
it out because like when we record, it's just me talking to Sam, but like most of our audience doesn't know me or like why my brain is broken. But so I thought I'd talk about it briefly and try not to be too much of a drag, even though it is a bummer. So it is April now. I was gonna say it's March. It's not. It's April. My dad passed away in February of COVID. So he got COVID, we think, from like a very routine medical procedure and like always wore a mask and was really careful. But LA at the time was like super crazy. Like they had to change the air pollution regulations so more crematories could work overtime. Like very bad.
Oh,
So he was in the hospital on a ventilator, and while he was in there, I also got COVID from taking care of him. So, like, I was stuck in his apartment, couldn't go to the hospital. He was in the hospital. I was super sick. My sister was in Kentucky. My mom was in San Diego. Like, it was really, really bad. So that was really terrible, and I'm still not free of COVID after 2 months, which is bananas. And then, like, three weeks after my dad died, we had to put my cat to sleep.
Yeah, Judy, who many
yeah.
of the listeners know and love as having the biggest eyes of any
yeah.
cat ever, and generally being an angel in
yeah,
delight.
Well, she had the biggest eyes.
She was a really, really good
cat. But as it turns out, a very deformed heart, which I didn't know about. So, like, basically, she, like, I noticed she was breathing weird, and I thought, like, oh, she must have, like, allergies, because she has really bad allergies. And I took her to the vet, and they're like, oh, she's gonna die today. So that happened. So that was super fun for me. So like I've been dealing with all that and all the paperwork and trying to deal with my dad's art studio, which has been deeply insane.
I saw
yeah,
it. It's
Sam,
crazy.
On the plus side, I did get to see Sam.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I did get to go to I very carefully and safely, and I'm vaccinated, traveled to California to see my dear friends who have had a very hard time. So that was that was nice to see.
So you helped clean my dad's apartment.
I did. I touched so much of your
Yeah, you really did.
It was really fun. Yeah. And I got to throw a lot of stuff in the trash, which is one of my favorite things to do. I have a perverse love of throwing things in the trash. So I had a pretty good time.
Yeah, she had a great time. The rest of us were, you know.
Had a fabulous time.
Like, I don't know how to talk about it because it's so, like, it's just been, like, straight depressing for months and months and months. Yeah. And I,
Can handle it. Our suckling kitties. They love every bit of stuff we give to them. They don't mind. If you can, if you're here, you can.
Yeah, you definitely can. So, I just wanted to say, like, I think it's important and also inevitable that we, like, try to prioritize having brains that work rather than making a podcast. Because we got really bad ones on a good day, and then a bunch of weird stuff happened. So, so that's it. And I, like, you know, I have too much faith in the people who listen to our show to feel like I have to say that you should wear a mask and stay in your house. But, like, stay a mask and wear in your house and go get your vaccine because I'm so tired of having COVID. It's so, I can't smell anything. And, like, everything tastes weird. And, like,
and Liz loves stinks.
Yeah, I mean, I came back a little bit because I was working on the stinkiest bird in human history.
I got to smell the stink bird on my visit, and it was worse than I could have imagined. And I've experienced a lot of Liz's horrible stinks. It's kind of, it's like a secondary part of your practice. Like,
yeah, it really is.
Like, you're a visual creator, but it's almost like the scents are their own entire craft. Because you have made new bad scents that couldn't have imagined before meeting you.
Yeah, it was a kite, which is a, like, kind of large hawk from Russia. And I learned a lesson I hope will not come up again, but that I shouldn't start a taxidermy project while I have COVID, because I could not tell how stinky this bird was until I was almost finished. So he's in stink jail right now.
It's incredibly bad.
Yeah,
And this is the greasy one. No, that's the porcupine.
No, the duck was also greasy. The duck was the one I had to scrape all the grease off of. I haven't gotten to the porcupine yet.
It's hard to narrow down the things that you own by saying, oh, the greasy one.
Yeah. At least, I mean, the greasy inside-out porcupine, I haven't got to yet. It made Sam shriek when I showed it to her.
It's so nasty orange. Really, why is it orange?
I bought it because the description said it's been around for a while and it is a little greasy. And I absolutely could not work out what that meant.
It's been around for a while. Like, why are those statements connected?
I don't know.
A porcupine, this view I feel passionate about to the degree of it being political. I think a porcupine should be the greasiest when it's alive.
Yeah, and I don't know why it's inside out. I've never bought an animal that came inside out, but it's fine. It's not a problem.
I think it turned inside out when it was still, I think it still had a pulse.
Yuck. Okay, so, well, that's a good lead into my topic today, which is going to be taxidermy and dead animals and extinct animals.
I'm so excited. I love extinct animals.
Everyone does. I wanted to
everyone
like a little bit of a lead in to this exhibition, like to talk about some stuff before I get to it. Because I kind of, mostly because it's just on my brain, but also because I kind of want to explain why I'm making some of the choices that I'm making. So I don't think we've ever really discussed at length, which is maybe dumb, but Sam and I like do art, like as job.
Oh yeah, we really have. We've mentioned it in passing.
Like that's like our job.
We're
like
just
that's
so
what we
sick
do.
Of it. We're so sick of it.
So we do art as job, went to school, art, all
as
of it.
Art.
Done the whole program. I guess if you follow us on social media, you know this, but if you don't, I'm going to attempt the genuinely impossible and explain what we do when we're not museum curating or like rolling around on the floor screaming, which is most of what I do. But I also want to talk about why I'm discussing dead animals and, like, what context I'm discussing them in.
God, we love dead animals.
I really do.
Sheer passion.
Like, really, the reason I'm doing it is because I'm gross, but I want to give you, like, the academic context in which I'm gross. Also, I guess trigger warning for a lot of animal death today.
Oh, yeah. Trigger warning death in general.
Yeah.
Reverse trigger warning on just everything.
Right, on the whole program. But, where are you?
How did you get here? Oh, my God.
Right.
Ooh, the 13th episode. Ooh, I think.
Who cares?
So, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's funnier.
I'm going to try to keep the art talk to a minimum because I understand that it's kind of intolerable. but it helps me at least. Like, I don't know if this needs to be explained, but part of being an artist or like part of being an artist at this stage of their career is almost constantly having to churn out show applications and proposals and submissions and having to write really concretely about something super abstract, which is, like, what you're doing and why, and, like, why you're gluing so parts stinky. Of dead animals to other parts of dead animals. Like, and I have to put that in stinky. An intelligent way, which can be challenging. but it does mean that I have to stay kind of sharp about my intellectual process, even when it doesn't feel very sharp. Talking about my work has led me to thinking about Sam's work and our work together and why, like, I think it's a challenging combo that I also think is very funny.
It's really great. We do good shows
we do,
together.
When we've done quite a few.
And they have a lot of dirt in them.
So Sam and I are both artists who dwell in sort of similar intellectual realms, but our art looks and feels about as different as art could look from each other, possible. I think. Like, our Venn diagrams touch... But, like, the vibe is very different.
The goal is so similar.
Yeah, it really is. But, like, I tried to summarize it, and I think, like, everything Sam makes is, like, tender and also writhing and sick. And everything I make looks like it was drug up out of a tomb.
Yeah.
Like, that's
I love that. Yeah.
So, and, like, with this episode and sort of everything, I've been thinking a lot about tone. The tone of stuff, like, for most of the time Sam and I have been working next to each other, it's been really nuts to try to combine our particular tones. Like, I think my work is, like, very quiet and very, like, materially sparse, which it can be kind of jarring because as a person, I'm, like, real loud and dumb.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, Sam's work, I think, is much more inherently funny than mine is. Like, it's not, like, I don't actually know if it's funny, but it makes me laugh a lot, because...
I find your work very funny, like, sometimes. Like, yeah. The chicken angels.
Yeah, like, I think those are funny. Up. I don't think most people thought those were funny, but, like...
No, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I think Liz's work is funny, I think, because I have an intimate understanding of it, and I'm, like, allowed to think it's funny. and then my work is more, like, it's just real wacky.
Yeah, but, like, your work makes me laugh a lot. And, it, like, during critiques, it would make me laugh when other people were not laughing.
See, that is both of our relationships to each other's work. We both laugh when other people are like, why are you laughing? And we're both just like, ah, ha, ha, we're so sick.
Yeah, so, like, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about, like, how I feel kind of right on the razor's edge with tone a lot of the time, besides something being really funny and also really serious. And I feel that especially in this episode. As a side note, I was thinking the other day, like, so as I said, Sam and I have done shows together multiple times. We did her BFA show and my MFA show together in the same gallery. And it was so insane, we had to include a blank room in between them just to give people a breather.
Palette cleanser.
Like, just to, like, give them a moment. But I was also, like, I was thinking about how we hung that show and how, like, for the week leading up to it, we did all of our installs at 3 a.m. while projecting the Eric Andre show, played at a deafening volume.
Blasting Eric Andre.
Constantly. And, like, what a deeply unhinged atmosphere.
Unwell.
Like, why was that the tone and precedent we set?
But now we've healed.
Yeah, now I'm so much better, and I... It's great. Things are going great. So... Alright. So, like, back to art or whatever. So, like, my work is made primarily from natural and animal materials. So, like, bones.
Dead stuff.
And skins and horn and teeth and yucky. Blood, etc. But
yucky dead stuff.
Super stinky, yucky weird
woman.
Stuff.
Nasty, yucky girl.
Very... Very bad, but I can at any point tell you the market price for a cougar eyeball, so who else do you know who can do that?
Are those, like, in a, like...
I mean, they're in a jar.
Like, they arrive in a jar.
Okay,
what
that was
you
the question.
After
them is up to you, I guess.
Are they wet?
Yeah, they could
the
always
cougar
be
eyeball.
Yeah, they are. Yes, they are. They were sold out last time I looked, but...
Well, the cougar market's just gone belly up since the pandemic.
$25 seems too cheap. Anyway, for the past year and a bit, I've been working mostly on antique taxidermy mounts. And I want to specify that I'm not doing taxidermy. I'm working with taxidermy because I have very little patience, and also I really hate wet stuff. So I don't like. I don't have any interest in turning a badger into a badger stuffed with sand. So
weird,
but like I'm really struck by how odd pieces of taxidermy are as objects, particularly in the context of my artistic interests, which are like issues of the physical body and like ecological panic, Donna Haraway, etc., etc. But it's all led me to taxidermy, and I'm really interested in it. And our exhibition today is going to deal with taxidermy, so I wanted to talk a little bit about why I'm into it and why I think it's such, like, a complicated subject matter. Like, okay, like, taxidermy is so wild. It's mostly what I've learned about it. I think a lot about... There's a book called The Breathless Zoo by a writer named Rachel Poliquin, which describes...
That's such a good name.
It describes taxidermy as being representative of cultures of longing, which I think about a lot, and represented it...
Why'd she make it so sexy? The title and everything.
It's a good book. But, it, like, representative of extremely different and disparate kinds of longing, like our longing to be... physically close to animals, our longing to categorize and dominate nature and animals and collect them and like physically own them, our desire to like be close or to touch parts of nature that we can't see or understand normally, also our desire to preserve dead stuff, which I think is like a super complicated and kind of different area. But like, I also think taxidermy is really interesting because it's simultaneously highest and lowest culture at the same time. Like, it's a dumb deer head slung up over a mantelpiece that represents kind of, like, a corroding of culture. Or, not bad taste or not kitsch necessarily, but, like, kind of representative of a working class taste.
Yeah. Very everyman.
Right. And also very, like, male in a lot of ways. But, like, it's also objects of, like, unbelievable beauty and rarity.
And luxury.
And, like, money. And it's what we fill our museums with and what we fill, like, really glamorous homes with. And it's also how we understand huge portions of nature and history how we can come to appreciate that. So, like, all of that is really, like, that's so much for, like, one dead deer to, like, have on it as an object. But I think, like, as I'm working with taxidermy, what I usually think about is, like, how there's something so... like, kind of devastatingly intimate about it. Like, there's a lot of essays I've read that describe taxidermy mounts as being, like, the most obviously inanimate, like, the most obviously dead objects, because our knowledge of them, once being alive and not being alive anymore, is so integral to our viewing of them. But,
yeah,
like, when I'm working with them, I just think there's something really tender about someone recognizing the beauty in this other animal and wanting to preserve it as faithfully mm-hmm. as possible and, like, to make it immortal and physically close to them. Like, yeah. I spend a lot of time cleaning and holding and mending taxidermy. And I just, like, I think about, like, the preciousness of that animal and how they lived and they breathed, and I can't understand that. Yeah. But someone else saw that and wanted to make it really beautiful and spent, like, a huge amount of time and used so much skill to do that. So I, like, it's so artful and mournful and, like, strange, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, like, you know, as I'm describing this exhibit, I don't know if I'm struggling, but I'm really conscious of the tonality because my response to taxidermy is, like, very personal, and I think there's something really complicated about it, but I also, like, there's also something funny about it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's hilarious. Right,
it's God, so dumb so and funny. Weird and gross, but also so beautiful. So I also realize that I feel, like, much more tenderly talking about dead animals than I do about dead human bodies, which I also talk about quite a lot.
You do.
Yeah. So, but for me, like, there was something where I felt more protective over them this time. But I just wanted to say all that before I, like, start very gleefully describing their deaths. Which yeah. I'm gonna get to, but I just wanted to, like, say that because that's just kind of what's been rattling around in my head at the moment.
Yeah.
So let's, now that I've got that out of the way, and we don't have to talk about art anymore, I want to take you to visit my ark. This is going to be called my Ark of Extinction, which I've named after my favorite line from a Brian Catling essay called The Stumbling Block Its Index, which I...
Oh my gosh.
He describes an indescribable sculpture. I think I mentioned it in my Raymond Roussel episode. It was also the name of body of work I made in my second year of grad school when I kind of forgot how to make art and just aimlessly arranged objects on the floor for a year. But, like...
I was there. It was art. It was I saw. Fine. Oh, by the way, welcome to the Museum of Fashion Talk. Oh my god!
fuck you. I'm not doing an introduction. You don't know my names. You don't know what podcast this is. It doesn't matter at all. I'm so tired.
To the Museum of the Vanishing Dog. I'm Sam Hinsley, and this is
Mind Your Own Business. I'm no one.
And this is Mind Your Own Effing Business.
Oh my god.
And this is I'm not editing this back good, to the start
don't.
Either. This is funny. This is much funnier. Where you found yourself is,
I don't know, you deal
and
with it.
Currently inaccessible. Oh my god. But only physically. We're accessible in all other ways. A physically inaccessible institution where Liz and I have recently been promoted from toilet bowl cleaner to... We together are one toilet bowl cleaner, but recently we have been promoted to curators for mysterious reasons. And we now have been completely revamping the museum because we've been given indiscriminate and unreasonable power over this place. So we're designing new exhibits and updating old ones. Anyway, that's why Liz is about to tell you about her latest exhibit, which I'm so excited about. Welcome to the Museum of the Vanishing Dog.
Yeah, it's a museum exhibit. This is a museum. I'm the curator. okay. So we're talking about my art. Let's head down to the biology wing, and we can experience some of the horrors of extinction. That's our theme for the day.
Great.
So as we enter our hall, we're presented with a biblical ark in miniature, which is to say, a still oppressively fucking big boat.
Yeah.
It's a huge wooden boat. It's moored in the center of the room, sort of the entire center aisle of the wing. And it's tall enough that it butts up against the ceiling. Mm. And we have to walk up a long wooden ramp to enter its door. So some of you may be imagining that I'm going to be basing at least some of this on the Ark in Kentucky, and you are correct, because of course I am. Now, I'll say I have never been to the Ark experience in Kentucky, but I have been to the Creation Museum, which is its deeply batshit extension, or I guess the Ark is a extension of the Creation Museum. But I want to describe it briefly because I can't quite avoid it, and also it's just insane. I would love to go because I am easily dazzled by high production values and I'm immediately confused and comforted by the conviction of their incredibly incorrect beliefs. But it's really expensive, and I think it's kind of ethically questionable to go just to feel rage at them.
It's like $80. Yeah,
it's really,
right?
I think the creation
is insane, because I've never been to either, even though I'm from Kentucky. But it's not even, like, I would give $10 to the creationist. What are they going to do with
it?
Right,
they already have so much money, but, like, I can't.
But $80?
Right? Like, I think the Creation Museum was, like, $60 to get in. And, like.
That's crazy.
It was a $60 experience, but it didn't make me happy to pay it.
No.
So, you know, and, like, people are having, like, religious experiences or whatever there, and I just think it's funny. So, you know, I have some problems.
Are you going to share your family fun fact about the Creation Museum, the connection.
I totally forgot to write that in.
You have a very good relevant fun fact.
Museum. One of my sister's ex-boyfriends is a wax model in the museum. She didn't date the wax model, it's based on him. He wore shoes with toes. He was no fun. It made me laugh.
I love
very
that.
Hard.
I love that fun fact.
Okay, so let's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Full circle.
So, the Ark Experience. The Ark Experience feels like the sort of thing that if I had to explain it to my non-American friends, they would either absolutely not believe it or instantly believe it because it's so violently American that it has to be believable.
Yeah.
So the Ark is a replica of Noah's Ark in the middle of absolutely nowhere, Kentucky. And it is 510 feet long, 51 feet high, and cost over $100 million to build. It was created by a group called Answers in Genesis, which also made the Creation Museum, and it describes itself as an apologetics ministry dedicated to enabling Christians to defend their faith and proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ effectively. Christian apologetics is a branch of Christian theology that defends Christianity against objections, which is super cool and dope.
And they aren't very apologetic at all.
They really aren't. But their whole thing, like the whole reason they spent $100 million and why they built two museums, is that they believe the Earth is 6,000 years old and that Adam and Eve lived with dinosaurs. That's it. That's the whole thing. That's like the entire thesis statement. And they spent all of the money just to prove that.
And they rode the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And that's true, Liz.
Well, I've been to the museum, so I can confirm.
You saw it.
Like if it wasn't so, like, socially and politically malevolent, I would just find it kind of charming, because it's so pointless. Do you know what I mean?
Like, they have models of Adam and Eve riding...
Yeah.
Velociraptors in the Garden of Eden.
An animatronic Garden of Eden that was filled with dinosaurs and penguins for some reason.
And penguins.
Yeah. Maddie laughed so hard that she had to sit down at one point. Like, yeah. She just had to sit down on the ground. I thought we were just gonna pass out. And I kept picturing my biology teacher grandfather having some sort of episode in there, just losing his mind, was kind of all I could think about. Well, long story short, there's a full-scale Ark in the middle of nowhere in northern Kentucky. It's super high budget. It supposedly takes like 1 million hours to walk through. And attempts to explain the science behind the Ark story.
Yeah, like, science.
There's animatronic dinosaurs in cages. Because of course there are. And I can't stress this enough. It is deeply wrong and deeply insane. Having said that. I want to get to my Ark, which is kind of modeled about it, is also a little bit wrong and insane, but I will not try to explain how polar bears were acquired by a man in the Middle East, which they dedicate a lot of time to.
Huh.
So as I said, there's a long wooden ramp that leads up to the door to our Ark, so let's head up there. Above the door is the inscription, "The whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together." Which is the KJV version of Romans 8:22, and a passage that the Ark Experience used inexplicably to justify their reopening during COVID, which I did not understand at all, but I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, God.
The quote was strange and lovely and not applicable at all to COVID.
You think they make you wear a mask in the Ark? I bet they don't.
They absolutely do not. Come on.
I bet they don't.
I would bet money they don't. So anyway, I thought there was something lovely about that, and the pains of extinction on all of us, and as an interconnected network. So, as we walk through the door, we can see the entire interior is made of the same light wood as the exterior, just like the Ark.
Gorgeous.
And it's one large, it's like room with several different installations set up, sort of two on one side, three on the other, and then one at the back. As per my usual style, it's relatively low lit, and we have electric candles posted every few feet. But it's not so dark that you can't read the informational plaques. But I wanted it to be a different kind of atmosphere, and like a closed atmosphere. So in each installation is a diorama of animals living inside my Ark. No cages, because I think they can mingle, because also they're dead.
They're friends.
Yeah. Well, also, it's like in my house. The only rule is that all the animals have to get along. That's the rule. So they're all taxidermy models. And if you're thinking, how can it be taxidermy if it's extinct? I say, hush, sweet child. There is a real answer to this, but it's very long, technical, and not terrifically interesting if you don't have extremely niche interests. But there is a whole wing of taxidermy that's dedicated to...
You underestimate our listeners.
I know. There's a whole
wing... We're going to get messages. I can't believe you didn't explain the taxidermy process. Obviously, we want to know.
There's like a branch of taxidermy and taxidermists who make reproductions of animals that are extinct or rare or hard to get out of real animals, but not the animals that it's made of. So like... Yeah. If you found a taxidermy flamingo, it might be made of, like, a goose or pieces of geese, but with dyed feathers. Like, you could... I've seen, like, a taxidermy panda, but it's made of dyed pieces of other bears. And very beautifully and painstakingly sewn
That's
and created
crazy.
Together. So, like, it is taxidermy, but it's not taxidermy
being an
animal. It's really, really interesting.
But I thought you were just going to give me the spiel from the beginning of Jurassic Park, like the little bee cartoon DNA. Dinosaurs' DNA becomes entrapped in amber, and then millions of years later, man comes along and intervenes.
Well, yeah, so there is a whole branch of this. It's very interesting to me. I don't know if it is to other people.
So they make fake flamingos? You aren't allowed to taxidermy a normal flamingo? Is it against the rules?
So, I don't think flamingos are against the rules. I believe they just don't die very much. Like, they live a long time.
They don't
time.
Die. They just don't
no,
die.
No, they live a long time, and a lot of them live in captivity, so they're not... Yeah. Like, it's not easy to find one.
They're like lobsters, actually. When you remove predators from the equation, they do not have a set lifespan.
Yeah, and they just live forever until they're crushed to death by their own skeletons. Yep.
Yeah.
That's flamingos. so that's what we're doing. So mine, although for some of our animals today there are taxidermy examples of that are extant, which is very interesting.
This is my favorite shit. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I love this.
So I wanted to say before. Like, while I was dreaming up my exhibition of an Ark of Extinct Animals, I was thinking a lot about an art piece by Mark Wilson and Bryntis Snabjorn's daughter, which I definitely mispronounced and I'm very sorry, called Nanok Flat Out and Bluesome. And I love this piece. And the two artists tracked down all of the taxidermied polar bears in the United Kingdom, researched all the origins of those bears, and then displayed them all in the same room.
So they obtained them all?
Yeah, well, they borrowed them. Yeah.
Huh.
So the effect was, like, super upsetting and gruesome and beautiful and strange to be in this big room filled with polar bears, which, like, would not only not occur in nature, but highlighted, like, both the super ruthless colonialism and trophy hunting that brought bears to the United Kingdom, like, our deep ecological anxiety at seeing... these, like, solitary animals all together.
Yeah. So I like this. It's like if Damien Hirst were good.
It is. If he could do anything. It's such a good piece. I strongly suggest looking up at least pictures of it. It's called Nanok, which is spelled N-A-N-O-Q. Which I think is the Inuktitut word for polar bear. Don't remember. Yeah. Could look it up. It has a great catalog for the show, but it was a little bit hard to track down, so you could maybe interlibrary loan it if you are a college student, which I think a lot of our listeners are.
Ew, did you see the one that doesn't have part of his face?
Yeah, some of them were in real rough shape.
He's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, like, a lot of them had been displayed in homes and touched and were kind of falling apart. But
he looks like the thing from HMS Terror.
Yes, he does. So I was thinking about this piece a lot because I was trying to imagine the feeling you would have standing in a room full of extinct animals that you could never, like, be physically close to, that could only be accessed as dead animals, and what that feeling would be. And I think there's something really chilling about that.
Yes.
So that's the vibe that I'm...
Absolute glee and heart-rending misery for me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to present the several species that we extincted and talk a little bit about how
me and Liz specifically
that I extincted. Okay, I guess actually I should probably start by talking a little bit about extinction, like what extinction is. I think you guys probably know, but and I also require full idiot immunity, not only because I have a dead dad and I'm very sad about it, but because I don't know anything about science and went to art school for 12 years and my brain is broken. So,
yeah.
I just like arranging things in pleasing patterns and I don't know anything. So that's my immunity. So I looked up the actual definition of extinction, and it's the termination of a kind of organism or a group of kinds, usually a species. The moment of extinction is generally considered to be the death of the last individual of the species, although the capacity to breed and recover may have been lost before this point. So the point of extinction is when the last one dies.
Wow. Is there a word for when there's some left, but like not like a breeding population?
You can be extinct in the wild.
Yeah.
So that means the only survivors are in captivity. There's quite a few species like that exist now.
It's so sad.
It's very sad. And so there's like a billion different reasons why animals or plants could become extinct. But what I'm interested in today is moments of like genuine human incompetence. Like, we do so much profound damage with habitat destruction and all of that. But and it's so sad that I sometimes think it flips back around to being deeply funny.
USA. USA. Yeah. USA.
So that's what we want to talk about. Not just an arc of extinction, but an arc of probably avoidable extinctions.
Mm.
So you ready?
Did I do that?
All right.
The exhibit.
Totally. So I want to start with an extinction classic, the dodo. I think most people are familiar with the dodo because it featured so prominently in Alice in Wonderland, but I honestly did not know most of the story of the dodo and how it became extinct or why or like what happened before I looked it up for this exhibit. Like, I had kind of an idea, but it was incorrect as it turned out.
We ate them all because they were juicy.
No, they yum. Didn't taste
so yummy.
I have other animals we ate to death, but so like
they look so plump.
Chewy, apparently. So we're gonna go over some facts and talk about how and why it went extinct. Big surprise, it was white colonialists. It's probably the tamest of a lot of our extinction stories, but it seemed ridiculous not to include it because you know, he's a stupid dead weird icon, the dodo.
He's the Mickey Mouse of human induced extinction.
He's on the t-shirt. So dodos were pretty sizable flightless birds endemic to the island of Mauritius. If you can't place Mauritius, it's a small island off the southeast coast of Africa near Madagascar.
Is it still called that?
Mauritius? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mauritius
I thought
was...
that was like an old-timey thing.
Well, it's still Mauritius. I do not remember who owns Mauritius at the moment, but someone does. I don't think... Like, it's not its own independent nation, I believe. I could be wrong. So the island was uninhabited until the late 1590s, until the Dutch took possession of the land, although it had been previously discovered, by a number of different peoples. But, like, there wasn't a lot of stuff on it, so it wasn't until the Dutch came and started building plantations, also, that the habitat started to be destroyed. So because white people are the worst, many of the native animals and plants were wiped out very quickly after they moved in and absolutely rended the landscape to make farmland. Although there were many species wiped out in Mauritius, the most famous is the dodo. And I guess I didn't picture them as being as big as they were. But
they were like are hefty, guys.
3 feet tall and 20 pounds. That's... that seems too big.
Big, meaty.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say too big. So they're flightless based on the shape of their big, stupid bodies and their little baby wings. Most of our info comes from records and drawings that sailors did in the 17th century, but we don't actually know a lot about their behavior because no one cared enough to write it down. That's really what happened. The first
they must have been boring.
Right, like they were just like kind of big and dumb and weird looking. So the first written record.
I wish they were here.
I mean,
in this room with me.
They're neutral as a species, yeah. I think. I wish one was in your apartment for sure. So the first written record of a dodo was from a Dutch sailor in 1598, which is about the time of settlement. And the last widely accepted sighting of the bird was in 1662. So white people had 60 years to destroy an entire species, which is wild to me. So, like, I think there's a perception of dodos being hunted down because they were too stupid to exist. But that's not actually a very good depiction of what happened. Okay, here we're going to run into me being both stupid and not having time to get into this properly. But a lot of species of animals that develop on really isolated islands are weird as fuck. There's a really good Trey the Explainer video about this, about, like, the weird ways.
I was going to recommend him if you didn't. He is such a good resource for extinct
animal stuff. Yeah, he's a great
video
about, like, why island species develop in super weird ways. But basically, like, if you don't have any ground predators, you don't need to fly. And if everything is small, you, like, it changes the way you develop in terms of size and ability and recognition of predators.
Yeah, makes weird critters. Super weird. You do know kakapos?
Yeah. Super weird.
Oh, they're so funny. They're so funny and dumb.
Yeah. So, like, okay, so, like, dodos developed in that kind of climate, so they didn't have fear of any invading species because they never had any. So they weren't afraid of humans because why would they be? And they were super easy to annihilate constantly. Right. I mean, like, Dutch wanted to build and the dodos were just, like, slow and dumb.
Yeah.
And they didn't put up much of a fight because they had never needed to before. So, like, their habit was totally decimated. And also, sailors brought dogs and pigs and cats and rats, who also all just, like, really did a number on the dodo. So, you mentioned eating them. And dodos are, like, real meaty. And there are a couple different written accounts of eating dodos, and they were super easy to catch, but could give you a really nasty bite, apparently. But they didn't taste very good, super chewy, but they were so meaty that they were pretty economical, so they did get eaten. So I read some records, so, like, that's what happened to the dodo. It, habitat destruction, people, terrible.
Yeah.
So, I read some stuff about how our visual records of dodos are probably incorrect. But, then I saw photos of a dried dodo. So exciting.
Of its head?
Yeah, a dried head. We have a dried head.
I'm Googling it.
So, there aren't many remnants of dodos. Only 4 specimens total.
Oh my god.
That exists.
Yuck! Ew! Yeah. Well, that looks exactly like what I imagined.
Yeah, so there's a dried head and which means that we have soft tissues, which is really very exciting. So that's very exciting. I read some accounts that it dodos probably made it back to Europe, and there probably were some taxidermied versions, but they don't exist anymore because taxidermy is kind of hard to preserve for a lot of different reasons.
He's so yucky.
The Grant Museum of Zoology at the University of London also recently found a box of dodo bones. So they're great. I highly suggest, if you're in London, I suggest going there. It's an absolute gem. They have a big jar of moles. I'm a big fan. So for our exhibition, I've imagined several dodos here, rendered as taxidermy mounts, two standing, eyes closed, and one on a little bed of straw, aww, as well as some eggs. And some photographs and illustrations, and a photograph of the dried head. They're very large, but I gave them all pleasant expressions, and they seem at ease. I chose to make all my taxidermy animals on the Ark modeled as asleep, which is unusual for a piece of taxidermy, mm-hmm, but for me increases how spooky I think.
I was going to say, that's really haunting.
Yeah.
Unsettling.
Like, when I picture them sleeping, I imagine that they could still wake up. And that we've just found them kind of frozen and breathless on this still ark that would normally be like churning in the ocean, and that we're just intruders into that space. So I think for me that was important.
Yeah. You're sick and twisted.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think there was something really lovely about that.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. It makes them more convincing by default. They could blink back to life at any moment.
Absolutely.
Perhaps although, even as you turn around, the moment you're facing away from them.
I have to say, I do find a great deal of joy in cleaning little glass eyes into taxidermy birds, but we'll leave them out.
They can have eyes under their eyelids.
Okay. Let's move on to our next animal. I suppose they'd have to, so it would retain a shape, but it doesn't matter.
We're just Skittles.
So we're going to... Ooh. Move on to our next animal, another unavoidable extinction classic, the thylacine, better known as the Tasmanian tiger. Mm. For our display, it's the only animal that I thought of setting up in some sort of pen, as they're carnivorous, but it's my ark, and they're friends with the other animals.
Everybody's
so
friends.
Suck it. Yeah, suck it, scientists. So in our display, we have two large wooden crates, both filled with straw and topped with thick wool blankets. In each crate lies a sleeping animal. What looks to be a medium-sized muscular dog with a really big head and a row of dark stripes running down its back. Mm. So while the thylacine does look like a dog, it is, or was, the largest carnivorous marsupial in the world prior to extinction and was native to the Australian mainland, New Guinea, and Tasmania, although it had already become extinct in the mainland and New Guinea by the time of British settlement because it got edged out by the dingo, just evolutionary-wise. Interestingly, both males and females had pouches. Inside the male's pouch, just a penis. It came with its own underpants. I'm super excited. I don't know what to do about it, but it makes me laugh so hard.
Built in underpants.
Yeah, what was the point?
Decency.
They were just shy. So unlike some of our other ark animals, we have a lot of documentation of the thylacine, mm-hmm, as it's a pretty recent extinction. We've got photographs, we've got video footage, we've got bones, we've got sins, we have quite a few taxidermy mounts that are in rough shape. But still exist. So I'm sure you've seen footage of thylacines. They're their mouths open way too big. Sure, you can picture it.
It's terrifying.
It's too big. So as this was another extinction staple, I think I've maybe knew a little bit more about the thylacine than some of our other art guests, but I wanted to include it because its story, like the others, is both sad and invariably stupid. Mm. As with some of our more recent extinctions, the reasons are pretty much the same as the others. Colonizers moved into its habitat, they destroyed the natural environment, set up farms, and began to set up bounties on the thylacines because they suspected them of attacking farm animals, because of course they did, because you went into their house and brought a bunch of sheep. What are you going to do? So the last thylacine to be shot in the wild, supposedly, was in 1930 and was killed by a Tasmanian farmer who had the fairly delightful name of Wilf Batty.
Batties?
Uh-huh.
Batty?
B-A-T-T-Y. Mm-hmm. So, like the dodo, there was a lot of interest in thylacines in Europe because they were exotic, I guess. I mean, they were weird looking. Mm. And a lot of them were transported to zoos where they had not great lives. they did not breed well, so they weren't able to, like, keep making them. And please don't take these comments as being representative of me being negative towards zoos, because I'm not, but I am negative towards zoos in the 1930s. So, as we all should be. The last thylacine outside of Australia, or Tasmania, I guess, died in a London zoo named 1931 of neglect. His name was Benjamin, and he was accidentally locked out of his sleeping quarters and froze to death.
No, I didn't know that was how.
Yeah, so it is deeply pointless and stupid and sad. That's, and they, so like, they sad. Didn't report it to the media at all because they thought they'd be able to get another thylacine easy and didn't realize he was the last one.
That's so sad. So, his little underpants didn't help him at all.
I know. His super secret little underpants. So the last thylacine death in the wild was in 1930, but there have been a lot of unconfirmed sightings of the animal since then, and some suggestions that there might be some out there living, which I think is very fun. So that's a thylacine. I think we could probably say it was extinct, but pretty much since the 1930s, there have been supposed sightings.
Unless you believe the conspiracy, and you won't let them hide them from us, the Australian government.
There have been a lot of DNA projects also with the thylacine, because we've got quite a few skins, so we've got tissue.
Like to bring them back?
Yeah, not a good idea, but I guess theoretically possible. Like, I don't, like, they were just like a big nasty kangaroo. Like, I don't know why you'd want them back, but
sounds expensive. Like, maybe we could...
Like, there's other stuff happening. But, you know, so for now, I'm gonna have it in my extinction arc.
There it is. They're still out there. Look to the skies.
That's right. Just, you know.
Look to the night sky. Every star you see. That's a thylacine.
It's like a weird bitey dog with underpants. So, all right. Let's go on to our next animal. So, follow me. And for this display, we have a large wooden crate. This one is upturned. And on the crate is a large pile of branches, upon which sit several nests with little birds in them. And each nest sleeps one or two very small flightless birds with brown and yellow plumage.
Okay.
Curled at the base of the box is a sleeping tabby cat whose worn leather collar, if you read closely, reads Tibbles.
I think I know this story. I think I know roughly this story.
I love this story.
Oh, God.
So the bird is the Stevens Island Wren, or the Lyell's Wren, a small bird native to New Zealand that became extinct around 1895. It was mostly wiped out due to invasive species, but what is really interesting is the actually absolutely false but deeply delightful story about its extinction that some of you are familiar with. It's unfortunately not true. but in my heart, it is.
Feels true.
It feels true. So some of you might know the story. The Stevens Island Wren is often claimed to be perhaps the only species that was wiped out by a single animal.
A cat. One belonging slutty to little cat.
One super busy slutty cat. So the cat belonged to the island's lighthouse keeper and was named Tibbles.
What a slutty little name.
A prodigious and gleeful hunter went on a wild murder spree and killed literally every single one of these birds.
Tibble, the Annihilator.
Absolutely. I love this story, but it is not actually true.
Damn.
Like, it was cats.
I really
thought
that was
true. But it
was
not just Tibbles. I also thought that was true and was very disappointed. But it was, people think it was, that just that people were bringing invasive species in. And because they were flightless and very small, cats did kill them, but it wasn't, you know,
this is my kitty Tibbles, the eradicator of species.
Absolutely. It makes me think about well, it makes me think about Bean, who, despite having the personality of like a soft baby bunny and also supernatural powers to control my dreams, spends every day gleefully shredding animals,
eating mice butts.
He eats their butts, and then he likes it when I sing a little song about the butts in his tummy.
Pass the song.
So that's he likes it when I rub his tummy in circles and go like, oh no, it's so dark in here. Oh, where's my butt? I can't feel my butt.
Normal relationship.
And that's his favorite thing in the world. It makes him purr so loud.
Is that a song?
Yeah, it's a song.
I hate that song.
So that's my story for the Stevens Island run. There's not a lot. It wasn't a particularly interesting story, but I love the fake story so much that I wanted to.
That's a good urban legend.
So, right. So there are 16 to 18, I don't know why we're unclear about it, preserved Stephen Island wrens that are held in museums, so you can look up pictures if you wanted. I could not find a picture of Tibbles, but I have chosen to recreate them from a beautiful house cat here. All right, so let's move on. Our next space at the back of the Ark has a large empty space, simply because I could not for the life of me decide which animal to put in it. So I wanted to include an animal that lived in the Northern Hemisphere that wasn't necessarily a tiny island base, and I had three in mind. But they all have functionally the same extinction story, hunted out of existence for food and fur. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can help me decide.
Yeah.
Although I'm...
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. As co-curator, I'm excited to weigh in.
So I'm not going to go through the whole stories, but I will show you my blueprints and go over the outlines.
Mm-hmm.
So the first animal I considered was the auroch. Auroch?
Oh, okay. Big old cow.
It's like a really ancient, very big old cow.
Big old messed up cow.
So it lived across Europe, Asia, North Africa, and the last one died in the 1620s in Poland of natural causes after becoming a protected species. Aurochs are interesting because they're related to modern cattle, and that's really ancient, but
Did modern cattle, like, we bred them from aurochs? Like, aurochs is the progenitor of all?
They look a little bit like longhorn cows.
Yeah,
But like mostly...
They're pretty, but they were huge, right?
Yeah, they weren't that big. I thought, in my head, I thought they were huge, but I looked up and it was like cow size, like big cow size, but cow sized. Huh. So they're just sort of...
Oh, yeah. They're like a little bigger, bit, but
not so where you'd be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's not shocking.
Right, so it's just like a big cow. So that's one option you have. Those, I mean, they were mostly extincted because we ate them and bred them with other stuff. Like, it's not that exciting. So that's my first option. A stall with a straw floor where we could let our auroch family live.
That's fun. I do like
my
that.
My second option is the sea mink. and I didn't just choose it for the name.
I can only picture very whimsical.
I know. So it was a very large species of mink, fox size, which is too fucking big for a mink.
With flippers.
Well, I guess like it was kind of just an otter, but it was a mink because like
and a little clamshell bra.
Absolutely. And they could talk. So those were from New England. And they became extinct in the 1890s due to the fur trade. I don't think there's anything terrifically exciting about the sea mink, except for its absolutely fantastic name.
The sea mink. Like, really good name for a boat.
Absolutely.
The sea mink.
They were really big. Again, size of a fox, too big. But it was why they were so good for fur. They were more economical.
Oh, there's very clear photos of them, it seems.
No, there's no... Those are just other minks that are wet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's just other
A lot of things pop up.
No.
When did they go extinct?
1890s. We only have bones.
Oh, yeah. That's really rude of Wikipedia to use just a picture of, like, a wet, normal mink.
Yeah.
I fell for that immediately.
Yeah, we've only got bones of them. But, like...
It's just a wet land mink.
It super duper is. But, so they were mostly from Maine, and we only have bones of them, but, it was recorded that they were super stinky, so I like that. So I have the option of setting up, like, a little marine area for a giant stink mink.
So they do like to swim?
Yeah, they live by the water. Again, I think they're a little bit like otters, but I don't know anything. But that was my impression from reading about them. I guess I don't know that much about mink, although I do have a dead one.
Are there any taxidermy sea minks?
No.
Where you say that?
No, there's not even any extant fur, as far as I could tell, which is surprising to me, since that's, like, 1890s were not that long ago. So we have the auroch and the stink mink. We also have the option, but I cannot figure out how to do it, of the stellar sea cow.
Oh, that is a really fun one.
Well, but it poses the problem of wet taxidermy. Which I, for the life of me, cannot fucking figure out how to do.
Because you would want to, like, frame it as if it is still alive.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Stellar Sea Cow was a relative of the dugong that lived in the Bering Strait between Russia and Alaska, so it was like a very cold sea cow. Mm. It was real big, real heavy, it didn't have any teeth, and it just ate kelp, and it sort of floated around.
Its head to body ratio is bonkers.
It's stupid. It's stupid
looking. It looks like a maggot.
Yeah. So it was hunted mainly for its blubber and apparently tasted like corned beef.
It looks like a leech.
It's kind of gross looking, but like...
the size of a car.
So like...
what an ugly creature. I'm glad
they're... Yeah, fuck those guys. So like, I guess I could build an enormous tank for it, but I don't know how to do wet taxidermy. It would be so stinky and weird.
What if it was in the floor? What if there were like a glass panel in the floor and you looked down and like it was sort of in a holding tank, like under the boat where they have water tanks and boats?
I don't know. It's a
And then you could do an illusion. If it were under the floor, it could be the illusion of water.
Yeah. Well, so those are my options. So which one do you think? Like, their stories are all kind of the same, and they all amuse me to the exact same degree. So I couldn't make a decision.
I think aurochs, because they have such a fun connection to, like, the current modern world, and that, like, we see their progeny every day, especially if you're out in the country.
Also, like...
But also, I think you should put a glass window in the floor, and you look under your feet, and there's this big, horrible leech creature. And you could just, like, put, like, some, like, filtered blue light on it. Maybe, like, even some, like water, like... moving like light filter that makes it look like the water's sort of. Because that could definitely give the illusion of a submerged creature without having to witch the taxidermy.
Well, they couldn't fully submerge because they were too fat, so we'd have to. So we have to create some kind of resin, layer.
Like a boogie board.
They were just like big stinky boogie boards who ate seaweed. So we have to create some kind of resin layer to give the appearance.
Okay, that's doable.
I feel fine about that. You know what?
I like that.
Actually, fuck this. I'm doing all three.
All three? Yeah, because the sea minks, they wouldn't take up that much room.
No, I mean, they're big, and they smell terrible, and their name makes me laugh, but...
The sea minks could be, like, a fun surprise. Like, you look in a vent, and it lets
Oh my god, what is that smell?
Oh, yeah, that's how you find them. There's a stinky vent, and you look in there, and the sea minks live in it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's do all three. Fuck it.
All three of... Yes!
Yeah. All right, so let's... I'm going to move on to our final extinct animal. Which, as I said, is my favorite, only in that their story is by far the stupidest. Also saddest, mostly stupid. So, all right, here we have another large, flightless extinct bird, much like our friend the dodo. The great auk. If you're Googling it, Sam, that is A-U-K.
Oh, yeah. I know this guy. I do want to see him again, though.
So, he is a black and white marine bird that lived in the North Atlantic. So, from... so, like, Canada, Norway, Iceland, Greenland, Faroe Islands, Great Britain. Yeah. It looks like a penguin, but it is not actually related at all to a penguin.
It looks... yeah, it looks like a puffin a lot, too. Like, a weird, mean puffin. Like, if a puffin were a threat, it looks like that.
Yeah, or like... yeah, like a threatening puffin. Big.
And no fun colors.
No, their beaks do look like puffin beaks, but all black. So they have, like, really heavy, big, ridged beaks.
And much more knife-like. They're very frightening, honestly. How tall are they?
Hopefully I didn't write it down. So, who the fuck knows? 9 feet, probably.
They're great.
God, I hope so. So, for our exhibit, I've hauled in some large rocks that they could... perch upon,
and they live at the mountain of madness.
and placed a mated pair of great auks asleep on the rock, and a single egg placed behind them.
Aww.
So, all right. So the great auk, its population may have been reduced by the little ice age in the Middle Ages, because their real only natural predator were polar bears. But mostly, great auks became extinct because humans. Just absolutely fucking love them. They were big, they were slow, they weren't afraid of anyone, and humans across the North Atlantic absolutely could not get enough of these big dumb birds. Mm-hmm. They loved their eggs, which were delicious. Their feathers made excellent down for pillows. They loved their skins, they used their bones, they ate their meat. Every part, delicious, fantastic. They were a significant source of food for a lot of indigenous populations, again, from Canada to Greenland to people in Norway. Like, all of them ate great ox a lot. And they had become pretty rarefied by the 1700s when protection orders started to be made for them, which did nothing except create an illegal egg industry. And they became... Oh, that's too big. She just showed me a picture of a human man to great ox ratio. Basically, okay, picture a human man and then picture a big, mean puffin pecking his dick off. And that's about the size that you have.
Yeah, it's like really at crotch height. And he's wearing like a really tight plaid short-sleeved shirt and Converse.
It's too tight.
And like distressed jeans. They picked such an interesting person to be like the size comparison for a penguin. Anyway,
yeah,
they're big. They're rather large.
They're pretty big, which they're again waist, makes sense tight. As to why they were so good for eating and catching, because you'd get a lot of them.
You're gonna be fed.
So they became super collectible for museums and private collections in the 1700s.
Oh no.
Which is terrible, but it does mean that we've got quite a few specimens left. We've got eggs, we've got bones, we've got taxidermy, and preserved organs. So we've got some left. What I really find most notable about the great auk is the unbelievably stupid and tragic story of the last remaining auk in Great Britain. It's not actually the last ever, who was killed in Iceland by eggers who were just trying to get the eggs. Mm-hmm. But here's the story. I think about it several times a week. So in 1840, three men, sometimes referred to as sailors, sometimes not, were in St. Kilda, Scotland, which is like super up north, Outer Hebrides, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these three men caught an auk, tied it up, and kept it in their house for 3 days.
Oh.
I have no story as to why they were doing this. Like, maybe they were trying to sell it. Maybe they were lunatics, maybe they were super bored, but they kept this bird and they tied it up. So after 3 days, the men were besieged by a terrible storm. Obviously, they believed the bird was causing the storm, which obviously meant it wasn't a bird, it was a witch. So they beat it to death with sticks, as you would with any witch.
Which is coincidentally how Liz and I will die.
Beat to death for causing a storm. Yeah.
With sticks.
So that was the last auk. Caught by men.
That's so stupid.
Murdered for witchcraft.
God damn it.
It's my favorite because it's so horrible.
Because it started raining?
Yeah, like the wind kind of blew and they went like, fucker's a witch.
It's this bird. We better beat it to death.
Yeah, with sticks. Sticks.
The sticks make it so funny. Like, they were hunters, probably. They could have just, like, killed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they absolutely could have. They could have done anything, and that's what they chose. Uh-huh.
It's a bird. You could just break its neck.
Yeah, absolutely, you could have. Uh-huh.
Three men beating it to death with sticks.
Or weather magic. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So.
Thrasher apart. Vile seductress. That's why we all wanted to fuck that bird. It was a woman.
Yeah. I
hate when birds are women.
I also hate when birds are women.
Oh, God.
So I don't really know what to do with that story, because it's so terrible, and my reaction to it is just kind of hysteria. But it does make me believe that the bird was absolutely a witch. As all birds
definitely
are.
Was.
They're quite pretty. Their story is very sad, and I love their witch trial. So, there you go, great auk.
That bird was a woman.
It was, and it controlled the weather.
A bodacious weather controlling woman and a vile seductress.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a hard story. Obviously, everybody, like both sides, had a very challenging time, but like. You're left only being able to support those men. You know, like
I mean, what are you supposed to do? Come on.
Like, what if that bird were just roaming around still?
Doing nothing. Being made into custard. Uh-huh.
Making dust storms and
rainstorms as well.
Yeah.
Clouds where we don't need or want them. Breaking homes.
Oh my god, do you think we're having global warming because we killed all of the weather witches?
It probably is what that is.
Yeah. Well, I guess we deserve it.
Leading men away from their wives.
Okay, so that's my arc so far. I was going to include an example of the Galapagos tortoise in here, but I had just wildly misremembered the stories about how delicious they were.
I was going to say, wait, they're alive, right?
Yeah, that's the part I'd misremembered. I remembered how good they tasted, but I'd completely forgotten that they were extant. So, like,
Liz ate a Galapagos tortoise one time and then thought, oh, that must have been the last one.
It was probably all of them. Yeah, no, I knew the story that they were so unbelievably delicious that few of them made it to Europe. But, like, they're still out there being turtles. Tortoises.
They ate them on the boats?
Some kinds are extinct, some aren't. It's not that interesting. But I did read a story that I'm almost positive is incorrect, that sailors made dodo meat taste better by putting tortoise on them. So it made me think about doing an Extinction Cafe pop-up at some point and serving dodo meat with tortoise sauce and sort of auk egg custard.
Like, what would the actual ingredients be?
I don't know how to make fake dead bird custard. We'll work it out. We'll hire a guy.
Like chicken with like sofritas on it.
Yeah, for sure.
The turtle thing just. I saw this video the other day. This isn't like related to anything. I just gotta get it off my chest. I saw a video of a turtle having sex with a croc, like the shoe.
Oh yeah,
like the foam.
I do enjoy the sounds they make.
Man. That noise. It's so sad. That's how they fuck.
Yeah.
No wonder they're going.
Wait, other people don't fuck like that?
Yeah, that is how Liz fucks. I was there. Each thrust.
I don't want to talk about it.
It's private.
So that's my exhibition. So there we go. I'd like to put other animals in
it.
But a lot of extinction stories are just sad and kind of a bummer and all the same thing. So I wanted to include some that were highlights for me.
Yeah. Fun ones.
Yeah. Fun ones.
No time to beat that big bird to death with sticks for being a witch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, that one's so silly. I like the, like, this could definitely be expanded upon.
Absolutely.
As we continue to kill more and more species in increasingly whimsical ways.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking up extinct mammals, like recently extincted, and most of them were like mice and rats, which is surprising to me.
When like the last monarch butterfly gets sucked into a Roomba.
Oh, yeah. Remember when we were looking up what butterflies tasted like? What was that for? I don't remember that train.
I don't remember. I think you were alone.
I wasn't, because I made you look it up and you told me that they tasted like toast, and I asked you if you knew that because you ate one, and you said no, you looked it up.
A, you were alone, and B, I lied to you.
She eats so many butterflies.
I was there, but you were alone, and I lied. I lied about that. Okay, now I'll Google it again. Also, you mentioned dugongs. I looked them up just to remember, and they have really scary, gross faces. What do butterflies
They're not
taste?
Attractive.
They have scary faces, because manatees have, like, cute little old man faces, like a pug or a turtle. Dugongs are frightening.
Yeah.
This is telling me what butterflies taste, and I don't care about that. I'm not trying to get in the head of a butterfly.
No, I'm absolutely positive we were having a discussion about what different bugs tasted like, and I wanted to know what a butterfly tasted like, and you...
This is like, they taste nectar with their curly little noses. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, right, well, they taste anything.
I don't need to know about their day. What do they taste like? Okay. Ba-ba-ba-ba. They do taste like
toast. Fuck you. We already had this discussion.
I can't believe this. I don't remember this at all.
She does.
Urquhart announced they taste a bit like dry toast, but had no other flavor.
I don't remember any of the context of that discussion, but I do think about it every time I see a butterfly and think, probably just put that right in my mouth.
I would eat a butterfly for sure. Oh my god.
You would...
I would totally
unfurl your proboscis and just suck it right down.
if one landed on my palm right now, I would slap it into my mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, I don't know. There you fucking go.
I like this exhibit a lot. Yeah. I enjoy it greatly. I love taxidermy. I love artistic taxidermy. I didn't know that there was a genre of recreating inaccessible animals through like faux taxidermy. I did not know that.
Very interesting. I should have included more about that, or any things about extinction, but chose not to because I was essentially just opening my personal research folder for this episode. So I will say, if you're interested in taxidermy very casually, I would watch the documentary Stuffed, which is on Amazon Prime. It's very good and very interesting, and I'm taking a class at the moment with one of the taxidermists on there. Because I'm trying to learn how to reverse engineer taxidermy decisions.
You're taking two really good online classes, and I'm really excited for you.
Yeah, I'll talk about them next time.
I recently took one. Yeah, I'll talk about mine. I took one on mediumship through Morbid Anatomy, and it was really fun.
And she's a medium now.
I'm a medium now. I can tell you.
Yeah, she can. It's really impressive. So anyway, if you want to read some books about taxidermy, I think The Breathless Zoo by Rachel Poliquin is very good. I think Gorgeous Beasts, Animal Bodies and Historical Perspective, which is edited by Joan Landis and Paula Young Lee, is very good. If you're thinking about taxidermy in the art world, I would try to find evidence of the Mark Wilson Nanoq project. I also like a lot of work by Dorothy Cross and Mark Dion, maybe Nandifa Mintambo, whose work I really like. If you're interested in taxidermy as its own art form rather than something utilized by artists, you could look probably at like Darwin Sink and Van Tongeren, who I have mixed feelings about. If you love theory, you could read Speculative Taxidermy by Giovanna Aloy. But I don't know if I would call it fun, but it is interesting.
If you like these themes and you haven't listened to our first episode on Roish, where we dunk on Damien Hirst for a long time, there will be some tie-ins there. If you like extinct animals, you should hop back to my episode on the 10,000-year-old dog.
Yeah!
The tumor dog that lives among us today, the immortal tumor dog.
Yeah.
I used Trey the Explainer as a big resource on that one also. They're on YouTube. And really fun stuff about extinct animals. Good. Also dinosaurs, if you're a dinosaur person, I know you're out there. Shout out to my dinosaur fans. this one's for you, baby. The other thing I wrote down, just because I got excited about it thinking about this topic today, if you know the old documentary series that I think BBC did, Walking with Dinosaurs, they also did one that was less popular called Walking with Beasts.
She showed me a clip of it today.
It's so good. Oh my god, it's so good. I can't attest to how it's from like the early 2000s. I'm sure that on a like a paleontological level, a lot of it has been updated and it maybe shouldn't be your first source for scientific information.
But do you want to watch a big nasty chicken chase a shrew?
Puppets. Mm-hmm. Really good. Scary puppets of like your favorites. Gastornis. Leptictidium. Eohippus. Mm-hmm. They're all here. There was a scene I didn't send you, Liz, because I was like gross and upsetting and it seemed like a bad tone for like right before we started. Uh-huh. There's the scene right after the one you watched of the giant terror bird eating the 1-foot-tall pre-horse creature. But like right after that, there's...
I wish I was a 1-foot-tall horse.
You are to me.
Okay, thank you.
And I love that about you. The scene right after that, the Gastornis' chick is like cracking out of its huge shell. And it's like... And it's really nasty and sticky.
Fun!
And then giant ants eat it.
Okay. How big are the ants?
Well, it's a really big bird, so they look normal sized.
Okay, but like, is it like house cat sized? Because then I'm interested.
No. The baby bird is because it's the fledgling spawn of a terror bird, the Gastornis.
Yeah.
And the ants, I mean, the ants are a solid centimeter or two.
Sure.
And they just eat that little guy up.
I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
Live and let live. Dust to dust, baby. So if none of that curses you out.
I can only apologize at this point. I don't.
I really recommend Walking with Beasts. Yeah. Really good CGI. Really good puppets. Yeah. I don't. Probably outdated scientific information, because honestly, you wouldn't think it, but paleontology is a pretty fast-moving field. It's not a joke.
It's real. It's true.
I'm trying to remember what outfit you wore recently where I told you you look like a slutty paleontologist who is bad at their job, and I absolutely cannot remember it, but it was so clear that
I can't remember
what
I was wearing either, but I do remember that Karen turned around and you said, oh, yeah, she does. Karen is Liz's mom.
It's exactly what you look like. It looked like you had no idea how to do paleontology, but you were very popular.
I'm here to, like, dig up the dead, the, like,
yeah,
woolly mammoths, or maybe, like, a Tyrannosaurus, probably. That's, like, the biggest one, and I think I can handle that day one. I'm kind of a go-getter.
I know there was a hat involved, and I don't remember why.
Oh, yeah, I was wearing a taupe bucket hat.
Obviously.
And I'm here for the dinosaurs. I heard they're, like, down in the ground, and I'm gonna fix that.
Oh my god. Yeah, so, I don't know, that's our podcast. I don't know what we're doing here.
Dinosaurs see me bounce around, and they come running. I don't even have to dig, mama.
Imagine you brushing them, being like, oh, there's so much dirt.
Oh, I'm so dirty down here in this hole with all these bones.
I think I have a fever. Mm. That's my new feeling for the evening. All right. Well,
did I write anything? I'm trying to think if there is any other good extinct animal stuff. I should know, because that's, like, a big thing. But Trey the Explainer and Walking with Beasts, you're going to have that's a great evening. You can watch all of both of those things on YouTube. Oh, Wayne Barlow. He doesn't work with extinct animals, but if you like...
If you like just like a big pile of carcasses.
Yeah. And if you like the, like, people trying to figure out what animals looked like, mm-hmm. Wayne Barlow does a lot of, like, far future biology, where he's like, what will animals look like in a million years? And Yuck is right. Everything's gonna get real messed up.
Are humans gonna start growing flesh underpants? Like thylacines? Because that's my dream.
Yes.
It would solve a lot of problems layers for me, layers. I feel.
Yeah, skin layers.
Yeah.
Like those prop pants that you can just rip off, but skin. Yes. You've definitely seen Wayne Barlow's work. One of his things has became like a meme that gets shared every... Well, you've seen that picture that says Seasons Greasons, and there's like a horrible like monkey creature latched onto the back of like a larger monkey creature.
That's from his
book where he had an entire book on prospective human evolution.
Gross.
Like, just in a million years when we all look like freaky Sasquatches.
I'm gonna keep looking like a 1 foot tall horse, so I don't know what your problem is. Yeah.
You
That's,
do.
I mean, in a million years,
That's
I will
like
still look
like that.
That's the
thing that people say about you, is that you're, like, really short and...
And I've got little hooves.
A horse. And little... You do have little hooves, actually.
It's private. Got a big, long tail.
That's private.
All right, well, that's all I got.
Where's all your sexy bones? I'm gonna dig up your dinosaurs. And all your thylacines.
Does it make it better or worse that she looked really slutty in my dead dad's bucket hat? What element does that add to the story?
I didn't want to be the one that shared that detail. The taupe bucket hat was a belonging of Liz's recently passed father.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's not my fault that when I put it on, I look like a slutty paleontologist.
You look like a slutty paleontologist who was bad at her job.
Really bad at my job. So where's the dinosaurs?
They were so big. I know that.
Yeah, I find like a bottle cap.
And I'm like, you guys aren't going to believe what
this
I just
dinosaur
found.
Is so round.
This dinosaur is so small and round.
That's a quarter.
What?
Are you serious? That's fantastic because my parking was actually about to expire.
No, okay, I want you to have the voice of the girl who has the craziest voice I've ever heard. I don't know how to explain this in a way without geolocating her, but she should have the same accent that I have and is a person that I know. And her exact accent, we had the same upbringing in the same place. And her exact accent is going, oh my god, you guys, you want to go to battle? Oh my god, you see that guy? It was like so hot. And she just never closes her mouth, and it's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Like, I can't hear any words that come out of her mouth because I just want to say them exactly as she's saying them. So I imagine Sam being like, oh my god, look at this dinosaur, it's like bones.
Is that what my accent sounds like? Do people not from California?
Yeah, no one tell Liz that is how she sounds.
Oh, no.
No one tell her. She's got enough going on right now, please. No, you sound like you would be a narrator for, like, weird sex novels. Don't worry.
Have I told the story about the erotic hypnosis job on this podcast?
No, I would... We got time.
I'm not doing anything. Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but I did audition to be someone who performed erotic hypnosis for a company. And I applied just because I wanted to know what the fuck that was. And they hired me, but they gave me just a normal hypnosis script to read, just being like, you're falling asleep, and not like you're falling asleep, but like with a boner or whatever, which is what I pictured.
Not like the ones we watched last year where it was like, your hands are turning into hooves.
My penis is as hard as a rock. My penis is as strong as a diamond.
You're becoming a beautiful female alicorn pony.
I did
feel your wings sprout from your shoulder blades. Your hands get small and harden.
My god.
You develop an equine vagina.
Do you think we could start side gig just writing and recording those for YouTube? Is there money in that? I don't really know.
I mean, they seem to have, like, no.
Okay, I guess just as a passion project, then.
But I started to say, like, they seem to have, like, 20,000 views, and I was like, that's not paying anybody's bills. That's a passion project. They have, like, 20,000 views each.
There's so many pony hypnosis videos.
Yeah.
And they aren't working.
Anyway, I didn't end up working for the erotic hypnosis company, but I am qualified.
Come on.
No, they stopped being a company because apparently it wasn't terrifically profitable before I got to actually work with them.
Dang.
But, you know, if you guys have any erotic hypnosis and you need a narrator, just send me an email.
Or me. I bet I would be...
The tone would be different. I think yours is more like... Like, if, to imagine? Induce, like, a manic episode.
Me reading erotic novels. And then, oh my god, you won't believe where he touched her. This is this is crazy.
Yeah. So if you want hypnosis or the opposite of that, I think we're your
girls. Oh my god,
you
won't believe what they're doing now. I can't even read this. It's so sloppy, sloppy. Wow. Yeah, for some reason, like, nasal cartoon villain just doesn't turn people on like it used to.
I bet it turns some people on.
It definitely
so
turns
much.
On. Well,
Fuck it. I don't know. So I don't know when our next episode will be. We're still planning to make some. I'm trying to pick which topic I'm going to do next. They'll both make me actively unwell. But we're still
take a lot more than 2020 to get us to stop doing this fucked up nasty podcast that we do.
Yeah, also, if you do know any witches who are mad at me, could you make them stop? I'm so tired.
Yeah, please send Liz some good vibes. Good.
Yeah.
She deserves it. She's really smart and cool and pretty and I know really
exactly
nice to her.
How to get all the fat off of a duck hide.
Don't worry about that. But also, you should follow her at Liz Hamilton on Instagram. That's LIZZ. You know how to spell Hamilton, but yep. It's got two Z's. Throw that in there.
If you put the duck in the sun, it'll melt a little bit. The fat.
And you should. And you
the
should
fat
follow...
will melt a little bit, and it'll be really easy to scrape off if you've got like a scraper or like some ceramics tools.
And you should check out the musician who did our intro and outro music, Greta Russell, at NoiseWife, at Noise_wife on Instagram.
You have to be kind of gentle because the skin will rip.
And
but
you
like...
should follow me at Sam Sketchbook on Instagram as well. And then our handle at Vanishing Dogs, and you should not listen to.
But like so much comes off. Like you wouldn't believe how much
just
is stuck
keep your
under
eyes
there.
On me. Look at me. Just follow at Vanishing Dogs. Don't mind her. She's been through a lot. You know, like people act out. Thank you for listening.
And like if you take like a baby toothbrush, you can like use it and like push some of it out if it's all melted.